Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you all for being here. We appreciate and grateful that you've traveled from all over the world to be with the Link community and Link family and to spend your week with us. What Brent and I are here to do is to talk about some of the investments we've made in server and service, and we'll touch on some of the clients as well, since the last conference that we had post the official release of 2013, and we've divided that into three sections. So just before we get started, though, let's do some quick intros. I'm Ali Wahani. I'm a principal lead in our Lincoln Skype customer engineering team, and my team is responsible for our feedback and validation programs. And you heard Gurdeep talk about feedback and the closed-loop process that we have. So all the various input channels that we have, both from a structured and unstructured processes that are captured, prioritized, justified, and then fed to the various Scrum teams that we have and that delivering on your feedback, as well as the validation that goes on with our select number of customers and partners prior to release, is what my team does. Brandon?
Hi, my name is Brandon Bernier. I'm a senior program manager on an enterprise deployment engineering team. We do a lot of work with a lot of you via our TAP programs, and we're really responsible for making sure that as you're going through and doing your deployments, that any of those big roadblocks that you're running into, that we get that feedback and that we remediate as appropriate.
Excellent. So as I mentioned, our presentation is divided into three sections. We'll first talk about the transition that you also heard during the keynote to a more frequent release cadence and how that ties to the strategy that we have. Then we've selected a number of investments we've made over the last 12 months, and we'll dig deeper into that from mobility to voice to manageability. And then we'll close this off by touching a little bit about the look-forward plans that we have and some of the investments that you also heard during the keynote, hopefully adding a bit more color to that. So all the folks that are in all those other competing sessions are missing out on quite a bit by not being here. So let's get right into this. So we have traditionally, starting with even back in LCS 2003, been following more of a waterfall development methodology. So there's 2 to 3 year release cycle, starting with very well-defined product planning, spec authoring, development test, validation with our customers, and release. And when you approach that in more of a serial fashion, obviously, it does take some bit of time to get that out. And but we've since transitioned to more of a Scrum or Agile development methodology that allows us to have the quarterly updates that Gurdeep talked about to be able to be far more responsive to your needs and to feedback that we are gathering from all of you and from the community. And so what that really means is just, this is just a snapshot of what we've been able to actually ship over the last 12 months. It's just your feedback that we've gathered, that we've prioritized and built justification for to make sure that we continue to be responsive to the requests that we hear and we capture from you. This is, as I mentioned, just a snapshot and how we've evolved. We haven't even had a major release, quote unquote, but we've been able to deliver all these capabilities, and that's sort of a part of the transition that we've made. And so we'll continue down this path, and some of what you heard about what's coming is also reflected in that. But as we also transition from this world that in the journey that Gurdeep talked about, this concept of unified communications over the last 10 years, bringing these disparate modalities into a very cohesive, unified story for your employees. If you're a customer of ours or if you're a partner, the customers, the end customers that you do work with, to a single unified platform, we need to take that to that next step. We do realize that in order to realize the vision that we have for that communication end-to-end, we need to go beyond the boundaries of your organization and connect you with suppliers, with partners, with consumers that you might be serving. And that's really that transition of unified communications to universal as we enable the sort of evolutionary path that we've taken to communication over the last decade to that next step and be able to provide the seamless experience across the board and not just limited within the boundaries of your company. And the very first step in that journey is what we delivered last year with the audio capabilities as well as instant messaging capabilities between Link and Skype. And as you heard this morning, we're adding video to that mix, and you saw that demo of that. There is a dedicated session, I think at least a couple actually, that talks about the inner workings of Link and Skype, what we call Federation Phase 2, in addition of video to that mix. This is going to be a reality, and we're certainly starting to dog food that now internally, and will be available in a preview capability to some of our top customers as well shortly. What I want to touch on with this slide is just to talk about at a high level some of those changes that we've made since phase one. In phase one, as I mentioned, we had IM and we had audio capabilities. With phase two, we're transitioning and we're moving beyond that by adding video. And part of that is the addition of a couple specific codecs on both fronts, on the Link and Skype front, addition of support of H.264 on both ends to be able to have that HD video quality that you had, that you saw as part of the demo, but also having a consistent codec on both ends. What the other change that this allows us to do is to encrypt that communication, both on the signaling front as well as the rich media front, in an end-to-end fashion, so that we are actually leveraging TLS as well as SRTP to provide you with that end-to-end encryption. We also leverage Stentern for NAT traversal, and that is a difference between phase one and phase two in terms of how even audio calls are established. If you had attended any of our deeper dives into how we established audio during phase one, or you've read some of our documentation, there is a distinction and difference between how we are approaching it now that we actually support Stentern on both ends, be able to establish that peer-to-peer call between Link and Skype, and how we actually establish those calls through mediation server during phase one. And again, if you're interested, there's a level 200 session, and it's more of a setting the context for the rest of the week. If you're interested in how we are actually accomplishing this, I encourage you to attend the related sessions at the conference. So on to our voice investments. So obviously this is more of a look forward, what I just talked about with Link and Skype. We do, as I mentioned, also want to cover some of the enhancements we've made since the release of 2013. And we've divided that into different groups. So voice investments, we'll start off with that, and then I'll transition it to Brandon talk about some of the other areas. One of the first cumulative updates that we had after the release of Link 2013, what we call internally CU1, or you may know it as a February update, 2013 that is, was the addition of location-based routing. So the idea here is establishing the call routes based on where the caller is located. And selecting the closest gateway to establish that PSTN call to the destination. Typically, with a VoIP or IP PBX implementation, one of the advantages and the cost savings associated with least cost routing. So the idea there, which is different than LBR, is to terminate the call to PSTN leveraging a gateway closest to where the destination is, the number that or the individual that you might be calling. So the idea with LBR is somewhat different because we select the gateway based on where the caller and the calling party is located. And to be able to terminate out to PSTN and establish that call leveraging PSTN to ensure that to prevent toll bypass and other regulatory requirements that some of our customers have in different geographies. And so that was a blocker from a deployment, voice deployment perspective in those countries, and we've been able to address that with this investment. This was initially, as I mentioned, introduced in our February update last year, and we enhanced that by in the July update with the addition of the support for link conferencing as part of LBR as well. I did already touch on the differences between least cost routing and location-based routing, built Mint for two different purposes and two different objectives. But the reason I'm comparing the two is that they're often confused and mixed, and hopefully the distinction is clear about the objectives that you may have depending on what your goals are. The beauty of LBR from a link perspective is that you can also apply to different regions. So once you define, once you deploy enterprise voice, and you get to actually define your regions, your sites, and your subnets, you can actually be very specific. So if there are specific geographies that you know your global deployment in, you may actually require that, you can actually enable LBR in those regions and leverage that from that perspective. Another investment that we made based on, again, feedback that we were receiving from certain regions and geographies or customers was this notion, concept of group pickup. The idea here is that if I am in a close physical proximity area and I'm hearing a phone ring, what I might want to be able to do is be able to type or punch in a number, what we call an orbit, on my phone and be able to pick up that phone that might be down the hall, right? And that's the concept of a group pickup, so that the admins can actually define a set of orbits and be able to define the users that are associated from a physical proximity point of view that might be associated with that orbit. So if there is a call that might be ringing at Brendan's desk and I'm just a few offices away, if I hear that phone ring, I can actually punch in that orbit and be able to pick up that phone right on my device. And again, this was a request that we'd received from our customers and one that we delivered in 2013 timeframe. Next, let's talk about mobility. You heard, again, part of these investments during the keynote. And what I want to do is just touch on just the select few of them. Since in the last 12 months, and what you actually don't see even reflected on this slide, is the addition of native audio video capabilities on mobile clients. That was the absolute top of the list when it came to feedback around what we call mobility wave one investments. Our customers wanted to be able to have audio video capabilities right built into these various clients, mobile clients that we have on different platforms. And we were able to deliver that, and there's a slightly different architecture for how Link actually delivers on that, and I have a slide on that next. But in addition to that, going beyond providing AV capabilities, we also heard about feedback. Again, some of that you saw demoed during the keynote. The very first one on this list is anonymous join capability. So imagine a scenario where you're a Link user, you have a Link account, you schedule a meeting, but you're not always scheduling meetings with other people in your organization or outside that have Link accounts. You just might be sending it out to a group outside your organization, and you're expecting to join the meeting by either clicking on the link if they're on a desktop or a larger screen to be able to join using Link web app, perhaps, or that they might be dialing in using our dial-in CAA capabilities. But there are increasing number of mobile users as well. They may not have ever heard about Link, and they are receive a Link invite on their iOS device or on their Windows phone, and the next thing they do is they just go to their marketplace or app store or whatever, depending on their platform, download the Link client and expect that to work. And so the feedback we heard was being able to leverage the Link client that are available on these mobile platforms to be able to join the meeting in if you don't have a Link account, you're not a Link user day in, day out. And so the ability to have anonymous join, as you saw, is a capability that we've added. Another one going beyond an audio and video is data sharing and being able to at least consume PowerPoints or desktop sharing or app sharing that might be taking place by other presenters or other participants in the meeting. And be able to have that rich audio-video desktop app sharing experience all integrated, even if in, on smaller form factors. That's another one that we've added. A couple that are listed here that were not actually demoed, but I want to highlight as well, is the roster management. You increasingly scenarios where you might be a presenter on a mobile device. You're not necessarily just always on a PC, perhaps, or browser when you're a presenter. And we can't really assume that it's only participants who are joining via meeting mobile endpoints. And so being able to just do basic roster management and be able to mute users and participants in a meeting is key, and that's something that we've added. Being able to transfer calls, so if you actually initiate a call using your mobile device or answer one, being able to easily transfer that call to another user while you're in that call. That's, again, capabilities that you're all familiar with using our other endpoints, including the Windows client, that's now available on the mobile platforms as well. Part of the other change with Mobility Wave 2, or these new set of investments that we've made, is the underlying architecture behind how we enable that. For those that are familiar with the initial set of investments, we had this concept of MCX as a web component that was available. With 2013, we've made some changes to that architecture, and now we rely on our UC Web APIs, or UC Web for short, to actually power the real-time capabilities of mobile endpoints. And UC Web is a part of the web components that are actually on each of the link roles, and that we leverage the reverse proxy from an external authentication point of view as they to connect the user to the closest server or pool or the server pool associated with that user that's signing in to be able to establish those calls. So from our underlying architecture perspective, there has been some changes as well. We also had this concept of push notification. We continue to have that for our Windows Phone in 2013 as well. And for that, there's that concept of federation with Office 365 to be able to deliver the notifications to those users. So those are, again, some high-level changes. They're dedicated mobile sessions at the conference, and I encourage you to attend those if you're interested. So with that, I'll pass it on to Brendan to talk about some of our manageability and other investments.
Hey, thanks, Ali. So before we had passive authentication, the way that Link was expecting you to authenticate was you would bootstrap it with your SIP URI, your username, and then you would give it your corporate username and password. And then you would use that to sign in. You would get a Link certificate, and then you would use that from that point forward. Well, and for the vast majority of scenarios, totally fine. However, we've seen from some organizations that they're actually moving away from using a username and a password. They want to authenticate with something besides the traditional username and password. And that's exactly what passive auth is intended to, the objective that it's intending to meet. So what is passive authentication? Passive authentication is when you delegate authentication responsibility away from the application and you're moving it to a trusted third party. For the passive auth scenarios with Link, we've chosen to use Active Directory Federation services to fulfill the passive auth requirements. And what's great about this is that Link is just expecting that you'll return back an authentication cookie from ADFS. That's all it needs to know about. So any type of authentication that you can plug in to to ADFS can be used to authenticate as long as it ties in to ADFS. So some examples here. Where we've spent the lion's share of our time in this feature is really around enabling the scenarios for smart cards, forms-based authentication, but you can also enable other scenarios such as using a key fob. So a likely scenario there would be you want your users to go sign in. You present them with a forms-based window that you would enter the key that is on the key fob, and then that would link into ADFS. You'd get the cookie, and you'd be on your way. So the requirements for this are purely you just need Active Directory Federation Services version 2.0 or later. Now, I would say this feature requires a little bit of engineering effort when you're deploying, when you're intending to deploy this feature. So about 50% of the clients today support passive authentication. And also, if you need to have Exchange integration as well, that's something that it needs to be disabled, purely from the perspective of the EWS services that we rely on to pull your meetings, types of information. That does not support passive authentication at this time. All right, so how does this work? So you can see here we have a Link desktop client, Link server, and an Active Directory Federation server. So the Link client, you just put in your SIP URI, hit sign in, and it's going to send a request over to the Link server. The Link server replies back with, hey, this is what you need to supply me with in order to sign in. And in there, there's going to be a redirect to tell you to go talk to ADFS. The client will then take that redirection, talk to ADFS, and say, I want to authenticate. What type of information do I need to supply you for you to give me an auth cookie? ADFS tells the client what you need. The client then gives that information back to ADFS, and then you have an auth cookie at this point. The client will take that auth cookie, present it back to the Link server, and get what's known as a web ticket so that you can access some other Link services to provision you with a Link certificate. And from that point forward, you can go ahead and sign in. That would complete the phase. Now, if we were to take this from a mobility perspective, what's nice here? It's exactly the same. The only thing that's different in this scenario is where we're specifically calling out Link server, we would call UCWA and there'd be a reverse proxy in the mix. So before I move on, just quick show of hands. How many of you are looking for or have had customers ask you about SQL always on support with Link server 2013? All right, let the recording show that everybody raised their hand. No, thank you. So we're excited to announce today, just for Link Conference, that always-on availability groups will be available with Link Server 2013 coming in Q3 of this year. So what's great about this is that it really enables you, or when you're doing a deployment with your customers, to have that freedom of choice. Do you want to deploy a cluster? Do you want to deploy mirroring? Do you want to deploy always-on? Whatever your customer or you are used to, go for it. And with always-on, it's really about taking the best of Windows clustering technology and taking the best of SQL HA technology, and it's moving them into a single offering, per se. So there's no reliance on shared disk, which is great from, well, clusters are awesome. If you have some sort of back-end problem with your disk on the SAN, there goes your cluster. Reduce complexity, specifically referring that to or comparing that to clustering. While clustering's great once it's up and running, the steps to get there, having to do a lot of legwork with your storage administrator, making sure that all the nodes can see the right storage, making sure you've got the multipath I/O going, there's just a lot of things. And those concepts don't exist when we're talking about always on. It's all local storage. Let's see here. Better recovery time objectives, specifically when referring to mirroring, right? So in the event that you have a mirroring deployment and you may not have a SQL witness, if you don't have the SQL witness, then it requires manual intervention to go through and fail over to your secondary. And additionally, the recovery time from an always-on availability group between nodes and mirroring is faster. And lastly, for the availability groups, there is no need for a SQL witness. All right, so some logistics. So you can have up to 2 synchronous replicas, and this is purely for HA, not DR. It uses all local storage, and there's really 2 different ways to implement. You can implement with what we have on the screen. There's 3 nodes, and always on is actually, its underpinnings rely on Windows clustering. So by having 3 nodes, you can use what's called a node majority for quorum, so you don't have to have a separate quorum resource to maintain that the cluster is up. In a 2-node configuration, the only thing that differs is you need to have a third party or a third entity to maintain that quorum. So we recommend a highly available file share. The requirements for always on, it does require SQL Server 2012 because that's when always on availability groups were introduced. And here's the big differentiator between clustering, mirroring, and always-on. Always-on does require an Enterprise Edition CAL of SQL Server, whereas clustering and mirroring do not, unless you want to get, you know, really fancy and have a ton of nodes. Then there may be some licensing implications there. All right, moving on to Link Online. How many of you are using Remote PowerShell with Link Online today? All right, great. So what's really great about Remote PowerShell is it's giving you the ability to use familiar concepts to maintain your tenant. And really where we want Remote PowerShell to take you is we want it to be your one-stop interface for management. You can go through and use the Link Admin Center as much as you'd like, and you can use Remote PowerShell as much as you'd like. However, as your tenant grows, as your organization adopts Link more, you'll see that you're going to outgrow the Link Admin Center, and that you're going to have to take a lot of those like tasks and put, you know, very simple scripts together to really help automate a lot of those routines. And as Ali mentioned, as we've moved to an agile model of development, we're continually delivering on expanding Remote PowerShell. So today, we have 48 commandlets, and we're continuing to grow. So what you can see here is that this is a breakout of all the 48 commandlets that we have today. You can see we've made a lot of investment specifically around enabling anything federation and external access related. There's a lot of policies you can go through and change, whether it's conferencing policies, all sorts of those things are in there. If you need to make user-level settings, client-level settings, manage hosted Exchange UM from, you know, soup to nuts, you can do that. Or if it's something as enable or disable a meeting room, we have a lot of commandlets to go through and enable that functionality. And lastly, let's see, around the tenant space, if you need to modify global attributes around your tenant or understand the licensing model of your tenant, we've enabled that as well. So for the reporting, this is an area where we want to give you useful reports that help you understand how is Link used within your organization. So a couple of the first reports that we've delivered on is really helping you understand how it's used in the org. So the first example here is the active users report. How many people are actively using Link, right? Because everybody can sign in, that doesn't really help you. But knowing what they've done with Link, that's where it really adds value. So the active user report is if you've signed into Link and you've initiated some form of communication with inside of Link, you would show up in the active user report. Now, we have two other reports that are really based around as customers come off of other conferencing providers, the method that they use to measure consumption is based on minutes, not number of people in calls. So we've gone through and we've provided two different reports. There's audio and video conferencing minutes and audio and video minutes. The differentiator here is that with audio and video conferencing minutes, a conference is three or more people, whereas in the latter report, two or what is called as a peer-to-peer call, that is the differentiator for those two reports. So you can see on the diagram on the right-hand side, that's exactly what the report looks like coming out of the Link Admin Center. Now, if you're saying, well, you know, I like this, but I need to roll this up in my org a little bit differently. I need to take a different view. Well, you can do that by importing the Exchange commandlets, because Exchange owns Office 365 reporting, so that's why our Link reporting commandlets are there. But you can go through and run any of these reports via PowerShell, export it to a CSV, put it inside of Excel. You can make pivot tables or graphs, really changing the data and forming it to whatever meets your needs. All right, moving on to guidance updates. This is an area where we've invested so heavy in the last year that we really had to go through and put a slide together. So this week for Link Conference, we are super excited to announce that we will have virtualization guidance that has been fully updated for Link Server 2013. There's going to be a session on that later this week, but it's really based around helping you help your customers understand what are the best practices. If I've chosen to deploy in a virtual topology, What should that look like? When we were putting this virtualization white paper together, we had so much data that we realized we had to break this out into two papers. And the reason being is, when you read the virtualization white paper, you can get the net out of, this is, you know, the type of information that I can apply to my deployment. But when we did our testing to validate how we came up with the numbers that we did, that's what we fully documented. Understanding how to use the link stress tool, understanding what is my user profile look like for my organization, being able to take those data points, put them into the link stress tool, and be able to accurately load test so that whatever bomb you're proposing, you'll know that you're right-sized for your deployment. For the networking guide is really based around end-to-end configuration. In addition, putting in lots of guidance around planning, monitoring, and troubleshooting. Now, whether that's from looking at the inbox monitoring server reports, going a little bit deeper with some custom queries, to understanding what's the implication of using a different port range or using a lesser range of ports for media. Those are the types of questions that we're answering with the networking guide. And there's two new methodologies that we have. The first one is the call quality methodology. This is all about going beyond what's in the inbox reports today. So a couple of the scripts that we provide really enable you to go through and see, from all the calls that are going on within my organization, what percent of them are poor? Where has it been a bad user experience? So it's meaningful to understand what that number is, but it's not as meaningful unless you can break down the number so you know where to focus. The scripts that we provide also give you the ability to dissect that number so that you can understand, am I having a larger than normal amount of packet loss or influenced bad calls between my mediation server and my gateways, between any other legs? We break them all down. So that all that guidance is really there for you to make sure that your users are getting the best audio experience from Link. We've got the key health indicators as well. So this was something that came out of a couple customer engagements where customers were telling us, we want to go beyond what's in the inbox reports for SCOM. We want to get a little more proactive, and we want to see, are there hotspots in our environment? Are there things that maybe we're not seeing on a 15-minute, you know, interval with monitoring? How do we go deeper? So good question. We went through, and when we started working on this, the feedback that we were getting was, there's a lot of counters in Link Server. And actually, I had the number for my last session when I was talking about KHIs, but it's over 7,000, almost 8,000. So with having that many performance counters, how do you understand what's top of mind and what's key to assert health of your environment? The team went through and got that list down to 80. 80 counters, huge. So now you can use these KHIs to understand where there's hotspots in your environment. And if you use the Excel spreadsheet that comes with the KHIs, you can also use that to give a scorecard view, not only to your IT admin to understand what needs to be remediated and where, but you can use it to enable the scenario of giving it to various IT stakeholders so that they can get an at-a-glance view as to how your Link deployment is going. For Wi-Fi optimizations, Link Server 2013, or Link Client 2013, is the first client where we've made the optimizations to our media stack to have the best experience over Wi-Fi, right? So the Wi-Fi optimization white paper is around, what do I need to be mindful of as I'm planning my deployment in terms of my company's infrastructure, or Wi-Fi infrastructure? In addition, being able to understand, well, what client impact can I have by, or what are the best practices in terms of drivers and client level settings? What will influence the user experience, whether it be, you know, for positive or for a negative experience? That's what the white paper is calling out. And lastly on this slide, we've got the reference topologies. The reference topologies are there. They're cookbooks to give you your starting point from whether you're deploying to a handful of customers or you're deploying to a large number of users. So that guidance is there to really give you your starting point with best practices as to what that infrastructure would look like. All right, hand it back to Ali.
Thank you, Brandon. Great. So the third section of this presentation, as I mentioned at the beginning, is to just spend a few minutes and look at some of the investments that we're making in the next 12, 18, 24 months. And so with that, I'm going to deep touch on these as well. As you can see, the extensibility story that we have for Link is an area that we continue to receive quite a bit of feedback on. And the demo that Derek conducted with having native audio-video controls inside a browser to be able to serve external and internal stakeholders that you have is an area that he touched on, and that continues to be a key investment area for us. The next is the mobile scenarios. We've made quite a bit of progress over the last 12 months, but some of the investments that we're making in this area, obviously the support for Link on Android tablets is one that's coming in this space, but an investment as we look at the various scenarios that really take us beyond just serving your Link users, as well as those unauthenticated and anonymous users to new capabilities going beyond the boundaries of your organization. So it's another area of a key pillar of our investment in the mobile space. Gurdeep also touched on the work that we continue to do on adding new modalities and new capabilities to our Link Online offering. And one of those areas, and today, as you all know, was part of Link Online and Office 365, we provide our full suite of instant messaging, presence, and audio, video, and web conferencing capabilities. And an area that we need to continue to invest in is addition of voice to that space. And so that's, and then we talked about this and touched on that last year as well at the conference, and that continues to be a focus area for us. Next is the feedback probably, and you'll hear about this in some of the feedback sessions that we have later this evening that I'll get back to in a second, is the feedback that we continue to receive on the need for structured meetings, support for larger meetings within Link, the ability to hold your all-hands meetings using Link as a technology and the underlying platform, going beyond that 250 mark that we do support today. And so that's an area that we're investing both from a scalability perspective, but also from specific feature functionality that you might require in order to be able to effectively conduct a meeting of that size. And so that's an area we've continued to receive great feedback on and we'll continue to iterate. And the last piece, which was demoed, is the native video interop with other endpoints and other solutions like VTCs that you may have invested in the past. And so these are the five key pillars as we hear that feedback from you and as that guide our investments moving forward. This is the feedback session that I mentioned just a minute ago, and I encourage you all to participate in. The only reason we can deliver on these capabilities is because you continue to be vocal, you continue to have a stake in where we take our investments in Link. And we take great pride in being able to have that closed-loop process and this closed community of folks and customers and partners who are really not shy to tell us where we need to go. So we do have five dedicated feedback sessions tonight as part of the Ask the Experts. It starts at 5:30. You see the room numbers here. They're just throughout this hallway. Depending on your area of interest, I encourage you to participate in one or more of these. It will be a two-way dialogue. These are not presentations. We'll talk about what we've heard from you all and then turn it over to the participants in the room to tell us what else we need to be investing in, what else you believe that might, you know, that we should be focusing on that you're not hearing here today or as part of the keynote. And that's really the goal that we have for these feedback sessions. We've divided up the product in these five areas, and we encourage you to participate and continue to give us your feedback.
And I would strongly encourage all of you to attend the manageability feedback session.
That's the one that Brandon is leading. but certainly, we look forward to just a great two-way dialogue as part of these sessions. And depending on your experience and your feedback, we'll continue to iterate on how we capture your voice. Last but not least, related sessions to some of the topics we touched on during this session. We have a number of deeper dives on whether it's location-based routing, Link Skype Federation, our mobility story, remote PowerShell virtualization. And again, depending on what you heard here and what interests you, please sign up and attend some of these deeper dives today and later this week. Okay? With that, thank you again.
Thank you.
We're here to answer any questions you may have. There are some mics that are set up with any questions you may have.
All right, and if you have any questions, I happen to have some handy $10 worth of Skype vouchers.
That's one incentive. Great. If you could use the mics just because it's being recorded, or I can repeat. Okay. That wakes up folks.
I have a question
sir.
So the question is, when will the iOS Link app support certificate-based authentication? Let's see here.
We do support that today.
Yeah, we do support it today.
This is one of the investments we made as part of the last 12 months, is to be able to actually have that capability.
Yeah, and it's actually a requirement for mobility, or excuse me, for passive auth on those devices, because what we're doing is we use the passive auth to bootstrap so that you have some way to authenticate to get the Link cert. And then that's what's used from that point forward.
Great.
I got one question. You're talking about futures for Link on Android. It's currently available on Android right now. What's the exact
thing? So today what we support is Link on Windows Phone as well as our tablet-based devices. On iOS, we support iPhone as well as iPad. On Android platform, we support Android smartphone, but we don't support Android tablets today. And so that was a key area of feedback we'd received from our customers in the mobility space to be able to actually have that larger screen form factor support on Android, in addition to iOS and Windows. And so we're announcing support of that coming later this year.
Is that the Android version specific, say 4.2 or 4.2?
There will be a version specific dependency on that when released.
Okay.
Yeah. It will be for more recent Android versions, absolutely.
Have you done any penetration testing for mobile clients?
Could you repeat that, sir?
Penetration testing for mobile clients.
Do we do that? We don't have any white papers, but as part of our security review and security testing of all our endpoints and all our investments, that's certainly one of a much bigger portfolio of security test passes that we run. But we don't have any public white papers on it. I would love to hear your feedback, though, as to if that's needed.
Our company is big on security, so we are trying to put Link into the secure container using Zen Mobile.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So let's definitely discuss that offline because we would love to get your thoughts and your needs too, so we can see how we can help you with that. Any other questions, feedback, comments? Please go ahead.
Question on the earlier white paper and all that information that you got.
Yes.
Yes, I knew that was going to come up. Thank you. So the virtualization white paper, it'll be on the download center this week. So when you go later on and you download this deck, there's going to be an accompanying slide that has all the appropriate links. But everything that we mentioned, it's all on TechNet.
So you talked about a large meeting, but currently we do
We do, yes. So we have specific white papers for how we support large meetings in Link 2010 and 2013, which typically requires dedicated pools to be established and those conferences and meetings to be hosted there. What we are talking about here is the ability to support that natively without having you to jump through hoops to be able to get that capability, but also some specific features that are needed to be able to effectively have your head of a general manager, head of a division, CXO present to a large group of people effectively and with confidence that that they have all the tools necessary to be effective in that meeting. And so we are investing in those features, this feature set as well.
So it's virtual or physical? What do I suggest for the large meeting?
Are you talking about today or what we are investing in today, in the future? I don't know if as part of the virtualization is the
no.
large meeting. It would be physical. So today the white paper talks about that, the large meeting support white paper, that is. There is the virtualization white paper that Brandon talked about that is actually being as part of this announced, this session, and will be available.
Yeah, and I would say this too. It's not that we don't support it on virtualization. It's just that there's no guidance for how it influences the rest of your topology. So it's more of a, if you need that scenario, follow the testing methodology and make sure that it's going to work in your environment virtualized.
Okay. Excellent.
Did you say large, you mean thousands of users?
Yes, we haven't really locked down on exactly what the upper cap for that will be. To code Gurdeep, he said 1,000, 2,000 users in a meeting this morning. So I'll just go with that.
And in the infrastructure, would you be able to do that with multiple, come from a higher education? And so we would have multiple large meetings, simultaneously.
Yeah, so that will be part of the guidance that we'll provide, right, in terms of the underlying infrastructure you would need to be able to host multiple meetings at the same time of that magnitude. We haven't locked on that yet, but it will sure be part of our guidance. Please.
Oh?
Many of our customers use nowadays, there is one to consider for this simple, small,
yeah.
Are there going to be any optimizations or as a contact center platform, maybe some new features of that?
For specifically the response group or the... as part of our future investments, that it obviously any one of the capabilities of the product today goes through an iterative approach, but is not part of the five pillars that I touched on. But that doesn't mean that we're not making investments in those spaces. It's just the iterative approach that we take to the entire product will continue to result in new enhancements, but it's not part of those five pillars that I talked about. No.
Switching gears for just a minute, from a high availability perspective, changes that come within 2013 or 2020.
Great to see you.
Can you explain what the user experience is if you lose the SQL backend infrastructure?
Yes, if you lose the SQL backend infrastructure, before you would go into what's known as resiliency mode. As long as your front-end servers as long as you have the right number of front-end servers up, because the change that we made from an architectural perspective is that there's multiple copies of user data across the pool at any given time. So in the event that a front-end server goes down, the client experience should be negligible, except if you were to use apps like CallPark, RGS, location-based services, those types of things would be impacted.
Any other questions?
I'm out.
Excellent. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll be around if there are any questions offline. Thank you.